If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Critter Collecting app from Topps is for you. Download the free app from iTunes or Google Play and collect your favorite images from the classic 1977 Star Wars cards to the Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, The Force Awakens, and much more. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Critter Collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for.
Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are. With Dan Z and Corey Club, the podcast you're looking for. This is. Yes.
For an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible, on the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
We've been waiting for you.
The Force is strong here. Even stronger than the coffee.
At last! Where have you been?
Welcome to Coffee with Kenobi. Here are your hosts, Dan Z and Corey Club.
Hello, and here we are, everybody. Welcome to the Rogue One Coffee with Kenobi end of the year review show. I am your host, Dan Zare, and with me is my good friend and co-host, Corey Club.
Hello there.
Welcome. Hello, my friend. We are here. It is exciting. We've all seen Rogue One a number of times. And just like we did for The Force Awakens, we have an all-star cast of the Coffee with Kenobi family with us. So I'm going to throw it to our resident expert in all things expertise. I don't even know where that came from, but go with it, my friend. introduce yourself, please.
Hey, it's Matt Moore from Comics with Kenobi, co-host with that other guy whom you may or may not know. And I'm really looking forward to this. I have seen Rogue One now 5 times.
Ooh.
Wow.
Wow.
This is Jeff McGee. I'm that other guy on Comics with Kenobi with Matt Moore. I have only seen Rogue One twice. I feel woefully inadequate, but that's not a new feeling for me.
Oh, boy.
Next on our roster, introduce yourself, sir.
This is Randy from Legends Library, and I have seen Rogue One once. So, but I saw it in 3D. So does that like... Is that like 1.5?
Yeah, well, it's like seeing it 3 times.
Yeah. I've seen it 3 times. One with each eye, twice, I don't know.
And last but not least, he is new to our review show, but certainly no stranger to Comics with Kenobi, Legends Library, or Coffee with Kenobi. We have the host of Rebels Reactions.
Yes, Aaron Harris here, and I'm happy to talk to everybody again and review Rogue One. I have been fortunate enough to see it twice, so I'm really looking forward to this discussion.
As am I. I actually saw it last night for the 3rd time, so I'm pretty fired up. I don't know about each of you, but every time I've seen it, something different has happened to me emotionally, which I'm sure we're going to get to very, very soon. So we'll just kind of go to the top. Overall, Corey, I know you mentioned with us when we were doing the show, of course, in Peoria, but since you've seen it now multiple times, kind of give me your overall reactions to Rogue One.
Yeah, it's interesting too because it's kind of the talk of the town with the holidays being so close to the release. I was able to see it twice. You recently saw it more than me, so that's, you got one up me, I guess. But overall, I think it's a great film. It's a great introduction to kind of branching off of the saga itself and kind of drifting into some different type of filmmaking, I guess, as far as Star Wars goes. But I think it does a great job of upholding characters and locations and just, you know, I guess, dive back into Star Wars and being able to just kind of see it from a different light, I guess. I think for me, it's heightened itself over time, I guess. My first viewing, mm-hmm. If you guys listened to the review show, I've seen it twice, like I said. I saw it with my kids, which really heightened it for me, their reactions and their discussions and all the stuff they wanted to know and questions and whatnot. But I talked to my cousin, who's also a big Star Wars fan, who got me started with Star Wars originally. It was really great to talk with him about it and just, you know, talk Star Wars. And I think it brings a lot of fun things in the franchise, a lot of fun things in the saga.
Matt, you have seen it 5 times now, as you mentioned at the beginning of our little program. How has it kind of evolved for you as you have seen the picture from the beginning to the most recent time?
It's mostly the tone that's evolved each time I've seen it. I mean, the first one for me was the night before it came out. And of course, it was just sort of that shock and awe of being at yet another Star Wars film, which will never get old to have to say that. And then it's with each gradual viewing, I was also using it to sort of look for Easter eggs and to look for the deeper meaning and some of the deeper context, particularly as it related to Catalyst, the novel that sort of sets up Rogue One. And then in the repeated viewings, even further viewings, I've been eyeing it critically, but not in the way that people are going to think, but I've been eyeing it in a critical manner to see how it links to the wider Star Wars saga. And it's been thoroughly fascinating because there's a lot of interesting avenues that are there that aren't immediate apparent with only, you know, one or two viewings.
I agree. There are a whole bunch of Easter eggs and a lot of really cool things that we have heard about after we've seen the film for the first time. There are certain things we caught the first time. I personally caught the General Syndulla thing for the first showing, which I was quite thrilled with. But Jeff, what about you? There are so many different things that have been thrown into Rogue One, for better or for worse, possibly. Overall, were you happy with the cameos and the surprises?
Overall, yes. This is the third review show I've done since the film came out, but it's the first one I've done since I saw it the second time. And I had a couple of minor quibbles with it the first time around, and one or two really what I would say major quibbles. Second time I saw it, everything just melted away. Everything worked. I still am not a fan of the Dr. Evazan Ponda Baba cameo, but it didn't destroy the film for me. But the second time I saw it, it just sort of underscored that this is just a legit good film, right? Star Wars or not. It's just a good movie, and it's a great story, and everything about it, it just hits on all cylinders. And I love that we have an addition to the Star Wars story that we had a movie without Skywalkers, and we had a movie without lightsabers up until, spoilers, the very end of the film, and it still felt like Star Wars, and it was just magical. And I cannot wait to see what else Disney and the other directors are bringing in and have coming down the pike.
Same. Well, Dr. Evazan, that you said, I think the thing for me that, and feel free to jump in here, anybody, I think the thing for me that maybe caused that one to be potentially problematic, although I did enjoy it, is that I think it looks the most like a Halloween costume instead of like actual texture of a Star Wars universe.
Exactly. How did he gain 20 pounds in 3 days? The guy in A New Hope is quite a bit heavier. I don't know why they didn't just go back to the mask or whatever they used in 77.
You don't know. The reason he gained so much weight is he ate Pondo Baba's twin in between. And it's actually something that's in the Rebels visual guide. But Randy, you are certainly as schooled as anyone I know about the Legends line. And they've obviously done a lot of modifications to the history of Star Wars, the mythology of Star Wars for Rogue One. For you as a fan of the expanded universe of the Legends line, what did that do for you as viewing this film?
Wow. It's wild that as I was watching the movie, I wasn't thinking about the Legends like perspective. I think I was sort of caught up in just watching the movie. I think that the whole Legends versus canon thing is something that once you start watching a movie and it's Star Wars, it's whatever. So you just enjoy the experience and have fun watching Star Wars, you know? So I wasn't even really looking at it through a Legends perspective, but, you know, was very much looking for, you know, those Easter eggs with the, you know, seeing the blue milk right in the first scene and, you know, those kind of things.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah. So really?
They held on it for a couple of seconds. I noticed it the first time. The second time, I noticed just how long he held on it. There were a couple of Randy, I didn't mean to.
Oh, go ahead.
Hijack. There were a couple of things like that almost felt like, hey, look at this, we're in Star Wars. But the movie flowed so well that it didn't take me out of it. And I think, Randy, I think that's what you were kind of getting at, right?
Yeah, and wouldn't you agree that like most people wouldn't even know that was there? I mean, Gareth Edwards made a point to put those things in there, and it was fan service. But if it didn't affect the film overall, if you didn't know that they were of significance, it just looked like you know, a shot of milk on a countertop. But for the rest of us, we're like, I felt like Gareth Edwards gave us a film that, you know, I've in the past felt like, well, they gave us what they thought we needed. And this one, this movie, I felt like that Gareth Edwards gave us the movie we really wanted. And that's how I felt. I felt like he took risks, and I felt, and I was happy about that, that he took risks, even if he overstretched at points. And I was really excited for just a little cameos and the little things here and there, even if they were a little bit overboard in some points, it was still cool.
Sure.
Because, you know, my family, you know, my son and I are like, ooh, you know, we're pointing to each other and like, oh, look. So not only are you watching the movie, but you're watching the movie behind the movie, which is really cool.
Right. And I think that sometimes Rebels, especially Clone Wars, when it first started, kind of fell into that trap of, ooh, look at all these nods we're winking to you, especially in season one of Clone Wars. I think over time that's just become more of an organic thing. And Aaron, you obviously love Rebels. You host Rebels Reactions so wonderfully well. There's a lot of stuff in here with reference to Rebels, the series, and Star Wars in general. How did all those things work for you? And did you feel like it was a distraction and kind of a gimmick, or do you feel like it was just authentic storytelling?
Well, I mean, to be perfectly honest, Chopper made the movie. I mean,
you weren't crazy about the movie at first, were you?
No, I was very critical of the movie after my first viewing of it. There were a lot of things that I was disappointed with. To be honest, I think my expectations were higher than they should have been going into it, because my favorite movie is A New Hope, and going into this had so much of a New Hope feel to it that I was just bursting at the seams. And then I went in there and I was like, well, this is cool, but what about this or what about that? And this is still cool, but after the second time, I was much more happier with the movie. My expectations, my bubble had been burst. I went in with a fresh new perspective, and I really liked it. There were still a couple things that really got to me a little bit that I'm still working through. But overall, I love the movie, and the Rebels references for me were just phenomenal. Between the Ghost, General Syndulla, of course, you have the Corvette cruiser there at the end of the movie.
Yeah, the Hammerhead.
Then of course the Chopper in and of itself, you know, anytime you put Chopper in anything, it's going to be a win. So definitely he's going to bring home the Oscar for him.
I gotta tell you, I mean, when I went to see it the second time, I went with my wife and kids, and my kids were just beside themselves with glee when they saw that first image of the Ghost on the tarmac on Yavin 4 outside of the ziggurat. And then when they actually caught that fleeting glimpse of Chopper, I literally thought their heads were going to explode, because they were bouncing up and down in their seats. And I thought that was a nice little nod. And, you know, and I loved hearing General Syndulla on the intercom, because, you know, it gives me a new hope that some of our characters from Rebels, make it this far, so to speak. Not all of them, I don't think, but that was a nice nod, you know, I got to give it up for Dave Filoni. You know, he's really got the Rebels fans' backs, and it really showed in this film.
Yeah, and I think it was beautiful and seamless. Like, I really felt like it was authentic storytelling. From last night's viewing, I counted the Ghost probably five times, maybe six, during that battle. And because I was looking for it, and it was there throughout. And I can't wait. They've said that they're going to show the battle from the crew of the Ghost perspective. And speaking of perspective, Corey, this whole film just has a different feel, a different tone than the Star Wars movies that have come before it. What does that do for you as a fan of Star Wars and just cinema in general?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's interesting, because like Aaron was kind of saying, I wasn't following us too closely. I mentioned that on a couple of our shows. I mean, it was just out there living. And as we get closer and closer to it, it did start becoming more real. Hey, this is a Star Wars movie. We'll do well. You know, it's almost like Marvel taking an experiment and throwing Guardians of the Galaxy out there, and hey, we'll just try this out and see how it goes. And this kind of felt like that to me. I guess kind of they're just telling a story that we all kind of like, oh, we know what's going to happen, this essence of being Star Wars fans. And we talk about, you know, the film itself and how it transcends that. But, you know, as I kind of look back on the film itself, seeing it multiple times, like you said, there's some new things to see and say, oh, it's really cool, or I like that better or worse or whatnot. I think what the biggest thing it has going for it is that you can pull out Star Wars and still get a great film. It's very similar to The Dark Knight for me. You can pull out the Batman elements and still get a good crime film. This is just a great sci-fi film. The characters are invested. I mean, I feel like everyone played their roles so well. And the actors did a great job of bringing us new characters we've never heard before. I had a hard time getting, you know, my mouth around some of the characters when we were first talking about them. And I was just like, they just didn't feel real. It wasn't a Luke. It wasn't a Han. It wasn't this and that. But as we, you know, the lights dimmed and things went on, I really felt like this is, you know, this is a Star Wars achievement, if you will.
Right. Matt, for you as a storytelling fan and just a fan of comics and just the genre in itself, what did you think that kind of risks that Gareth Edwards and Lucasfilm took with this that was so successful?
Well, I think the main risk here that was taken by Lucasfilm and in particular by Gareth Edwards was showing that with cracking open the veneer of the rebellion, that, you know, when you see Cassian Andor kill Tivik in the opening scene, because it's, you know, if he doesn't, they're going to be captured by stormtroopers. Mm-hmm. You know, it sends home to the viewer and to the Star Wars fans, new, old, casual or otherwise, that, you know, this is very much a real world, inspired piece of filmmaking, because, you know, bad things happen when you're running a rebellion, and difficult decisions have to be made. And I thought this film captured the nuances of that very well. It really reminded me of almost it to me. It evoked that 1981 film, The Eye of the Needle, with Donald Sutherland, you know, who played a German spy in Britain during World War II, who, you know, befriended a lot of people, but ultimately had to also kill some of these people because he didn't want to blow his cover. And throughout this entirety of Rogue One, the realism, I thought, was superb. I mean, because, you know, we have people who are morally questionable, you know, who in some cases will operate in just black and white, but who are also having to find that middle gray to make things happen. And they're willing to make these sacrifices, both personal and otherwise, for what could be termed as the greater good. I mean, let's be very clear here. I mean, this film posited to some that the rebellion was, in fact, you know, a terrorist group, whereas, you know, Saw Gerrera was an extremist terrorist group. But it lends further credence to that old saying that, you know, one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter.
Right.
And I like the way that Gareth and Lucasfilm made the viewers think about that notion.
Jeff, Matt brought up Cassian Andor in a very important scene right off the bat where we meet him as a character. I guess if you want to be specific about it, he does commit murder, but there's a reason for it. I mean, we're at war. This is like a serious, serious heavy thing. I wrote in my review, this is really the first time that I felt like the wars in Star Wars was authentic. In the pantheon of Star Wars heroes, what kind of character is Cassian Andor for you?
Well, he's sort of the Han Solo of this film, if we have to use Star Wars archetypes. I mean, he's even wearing his Hoth jacket, for Pete's sake. And, you know, it didn't even bother me because I got it. I got what he was doing. You know, one of the first things we see Han Solo do is kill Greedo. If you choose to ignore the the first shot that's been added in. And it didn't make me hate the character, didn't make me dislike the character, didn't make me distrust the character. And in the same sense with Cassian, again, we're at war. He was about to get found out. He was about to get discovered by the stormtroopers. He had a choice to make in that moment. He made the choice. The mission is more important. And again, like you said, this is a war movie. I dubbed it The Dirty Dozen Meet Saving Private Ryan Only in Space. And it is every bit a war movie. And that's sometimes we have to make those hard decisions. And sometimes the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, if I can cross-pollinate sagas and franchises.
You may. You have that power. Randy, we just talked about Cassian and the feel and the look of Rogue One. To you, do the other characters, are any of them a distraction to the overall story and focus? Do they feel like a forced like they're forced in there to create kind of a group of different individuals that are coming together for a common goal? Or do you feel like they fit? And honestly, if they do fit, do you think they would have worked in any other Star Wars movie?
I think I'm listening to the audiobook right now. I'm more than halfway through.
While we're taping?
No.
Oh. Super multitasker.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow, I'm impressed, Brandy.
Yes. I'm about halfway through the listening process. And so you get a little bit different perspective as far as a deeper perspective behind each one of the characters. I felt like they all fit together, and at different points, and since I've seen the movie and conversations with friends and with my family, I'm like, you know, I really liked, I've only seen it once. I'm starting to kind of become endeared to one character at a time. The Chirrut character originally was my favorite character by far. I thought that they put just the right amount of just martial arts skill, but didn't overdo it, but it was enough to show that he was like awesome, you know? But I've just kind of gone through this process. And Bodhi was the most recent one. I had a conversation with someone at the office. I'm like, man, he was just such a cool character, and he fit his role. It wasn't like everyone was larger than life. Everyone had their role. The book has really brought out Baze as a character that I've really appreciated him more as I've listened to the audiobook. But as far as taking these same characters and putting them somewhere else or putting them in a different movie, I think, you know, you guys will have to tell me, because you've seen it more times than I have, but did they have that chemistry amongst one another really, or were they all, they were thrown together, and I don't think that they really blended together. I felt like they were individuals coming together for a cause, and it was cool, but I think it would have been unfair to have those characters come together and gel so much that there was like this chemistry between all the characters. I think it stayed true to the story. The story stayed true to itself, and that those characters were thrown together and they united for a common good. And they ultimately, you know, paid the price for that. I didn't feel that they had a lot of chemistry. So continuing on or taking those characters and putting them in another movie, I don't know. Gosh, I'd kind of leave it up to you guys, right, who've seen the movie more. But
sure, Matt, what do you think about this? You have besides knowing about genre, you have a bit of experience in the world of the military anyway. Yeah, well, how do you feel about this whole thing?
Well, I do agree with Randy. I don't think you'd want to put the entire group back together for another film because it takes away from the powerful message of Rogue One. But I do firmly believe that Chirrut and Baze could probably easily carry their own film, given their history together, you know, as Guardians of the Wills. And, you know, we get the notion of how deep their relationship is. It's very much, a brother and brother and brother, you know, with a possible hint of perhaps even more. But in reading the adaptation of the film, the novel that came out afterward, it goes into a little more background about Baze and Chirrut as well. And it's clear that these two have been together for a long, long time. And given this nature, with the way that Chirrut embraces the teachings of the Force, whereas, you know, Baze has kind of fallen out, he's a little more skeptical about it until that ultimate sacrifice. And he gets back on his path, so to speak, thanks to Chirrut. I really believe that these two characters are the ones that could probably carry their own film. Now, and Jeff may agree with me on this, or he may disagree, but this is also a perfect situation for Marvel to come in and perhaps do a 4 or 5 issue miniseries about the duo to give us, you know, to flesh out their backstory even further. And which, you know, this would be a perfect platform for them. Both as a publisher and as a storyteller, to build on this legend. These characters, particularly Chirrut and Baze, they're going to advance in popularity as time goes on. And I think, you know, that's just, that ship has set sail. People really like them. And I think, you know, there was a lot of attention on Jen Erso and Cassian Andor, you know, and not quite as much on Bodhi Rook, but those two are the ones to me are the real breakouts of this film. And those, you know, my wife, who is not a Star Wars fan, but who nevertheless went to the film with me the third time for, you know, for her second time, each time she came out of that cinema thinking, I want to know more about these two guys. I want to see their story. And I got to agree with her. I do too. I would pay $12 to go see a Chirrut and Baze movie.
Jeff, what about you?
I'm on board with Matt there. I want a Chirrut and Baze miniseries or movie or animated series. I just want to see the adventures of these two guys because, again, you know, Randy, you were talking about the characters not really having a lot of chemistry together. These two did, but it was sort of a result of their history together, the two actors and the characters did. And I really feel like that was by design. I didn't even think about it until you mentioned it, but you're absolutely right. This was not a group that came together and formed a team. This was a group of individuals who were working toward a common goal. And I think that's maybe the theme of the film is that, you know, yeah, rebellions are built on hope, but they're also built on sacrifice. They're built on people who have to just get over themselves and get the work done. And I feel like that's what we were seeing here. We're seeing just how important this rebellion was to the people who were fighting for it. And again, I'm with you, Matt. I want the miniseries. I want the movie series. I want the maxi series. Give me as much Chirrut and Baze as you can. Or as I like to call him, Zatoichi, the blind swordsman in space.
they definitely they have some interesting things going on with them as a relationship. And Aaron, like the relationship between Star Wars fans and the creation of itself, I think is interesting. I think there's a nice parallel of us getting to know these characters. They're unconventional and we're not sure where to kind of place them in our minds as far as Star Wars characters go because we know them so well. So as they're kind of learning how to get to know one another, we're learning to get to know them as fans of this franchise. So what did that do for you going into this, knowing that you weren't going to know anything about these characters? And how do you feel they were developed? And we are going to get into specifics of the film after Aaron talks about this.
Well, you know, going in and seeing these characters as we got to know them, I thought they did a great job considering the length of the movie, getting us to care about what happened to these people. We got to know them a little more. We got a lot more on some than we did others. I would also champion for a Baze and Chirrut movie as well, or comic series or anything. More about them, the better. But they were able to make that immediate connection with the fan base through the scenes of the movie. And definitely, I think it was something that everybody expects from a Star Wars movie, to have characters that connect with you right off the bat and are able to develop those relationships with the people watching. And I think Gareth Edwards and everybody in that movie made that happen with people that we knew nothing about. It definitely had that to me. It really did. When people say it had a New Hope feel, the way these characters were developed really did have that New Hope feel, where when New Hope was released, we knew nothing about any of these people. We knew nothing about Luke, Leia, Han. Now we can't imagine a movie without them. But we had the same thing happen with Rogue One. We knew nothing about these people. We knew what was going to happen to them. We assumed we knew what was going to happen to them. And we got to build that relationship from the ground up. So it was very much a New Hope for those of you that got to see A New Hope in 77 when it came out. It was basically a similar experience for everybody now with these new characters, getting to learn and meet these new people and see how they grew.
Right. Well said. There's something, as I said before, there's just a lot of texture. I feel like this movie, more than any Star Wars film, made me feel like this galaxy is huge instead of just three planets for a couple hours. I feel like there's just so much going on here. And really, there's a scope. This is very powerful. And I'd like to hear all of you, if you could mention, or if you had to summarize one particular scene or character that define this film and your enjoyment of the film. I'd like each of you to kind of weigh in, and we'll just go in a normal order we've been doing, about what particular aspect, either whether it's a character or a scene, really brought this to life for you. And we all agree Darth Vader was awesome, so we're going to take that one off the table. We can do a whole show on that alone, and we probably will. But Corey, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I was always drawn to K2SO as a character. I think they did a great job of bringing him to life, introducing him to the Star Wars world. And every scene he was in, he kind of seemed to steal the scene a little bit with his corpse and just kind of can-do attitude and just giving it flat out. He was written well. But then, I mean, obviously that was the marketing too, that he was meant to those things. But I think he did them well without being cheesy or, a copy of another character that we already have. And I don't know if necessarily a specific scene sums it up for me. I don't know. I keep thinking back to, you know, just from multiple viewings and such, seeing how it stands on its own. Like you guys said, it's the characters that come together all have their moments, I think. And it's hard for me to say, oh, that was the best moment or one of my favorite moments. I mean, I did like Chewit taking down the Stormtroopers with his stick, and I think that was something unique we haven't seen in Star Wars before, necessarily. I think that was cool. And it brings new elements to the saga, I think, in that way.
Okay. Matt, what about you?
To me, character-wise, it was all about Bodhi Rook, because we got to see him as someone who had been swayed by Galen Erso to do what was right. And he did it at great personal risk and, you know, great risk to his family. And he was treated with contempt and skepticism by Saw Gerrera and his band of merry rebels. Yet he persevered. And you could tell by the acting by Riz Ahmed was superb, because at every point of the film, Bodhi looked like he was literally going to poop in his pants. He was so scared. But he also reached down deep within him to find what he needed to play his role, to make things happen. And to me, that says a lot. As for pivotal scene, you know, this film is just chock full of pivotal scenes, but one that really stuck with me was how fragile, in fact, the Rebel Alliance was. You know, when the leadership council had all flown to Yavin 4 for the meeting, and you had some of the members of the council openly saying, well, we need to disperse the fleet and disband it and scatter it across the galaxy. We need to sue for peace. We need to just drop this rebellion. I was impressed because it showed the cracks of tying such a large yet disparate group together while trying to maintain a common goal. And again, that's something that's very difficult to do. And I think that had a lot of real world relevance. You know, no matter what your political stripe is, it was very intriguing to watch. And I liked that. And like I said, to me, that added to this sort of contemporary vibe of this film, which made it, you know, it showed, we've always known that the Empire is got a lot of warts, but yet it was unified. And now we know for sure that the rebellion was never that unified, that it took the unselfish act, even a treasonous act, if you will. it says something that, so many, diehard rebel soldiers and spec troopers and pilots and Admiral Raddus would knowingly defy the leadership council just to follow this spirited woman, Jen Erso, who made this amazing plea for help. And that says a lot to me. And so that's one of the things I found so riveting.
Agreed. And I think Baze, and that I think that performance is truly Oscar worthy in a film full of highlights and spotlights. I think his performance really stands out. But Jeff, what for you stands out that maybe is like quintessential Star Wars or kind of raises the bar? Because I think in many ways this film does raise the bar.
I think it does. And there I have two in true Talking Toys with Taylor and Jeff fashion, which you can find at marvindougmedia.com.
You'll get a chance to plug.
Marvin Dog Media now with extra fortified nutrition. That's Marvin Dog Media.
Someone called me an old school huckster once because I always manage to get that plug in anytime I'm talking to anybody about anything. But
you're the Stan Lee of Coffee with Kenobi.
I am. Excelsior. To kind of echo what Corey was saying about K2SO, and I keep wanting to call him K2SO4 because I took chemistry in high school and I like to sound smart. I loved the character. First of all, Alan Tudyk kind of stole the film. One of my favorite actors on the planet, and his vocal performance in the role was phenomenal. But the way the character was written. Now, C-3PO serves as comic relief in the original trilogy and somewhat in the prequel trilogy. But there are times that his shtick gets a little tiresome. I never got that with K2 because there was always this tinge of danger around him. Like, he kind of means what he's saying. And because he was a repurposed Imperial droid, there was that added layer of menace to it, but it was always funny. But he wasn't playing for the laughs. He was almost like Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy. He was a character who didn't realize he was funny, and that made him even funnier. And he was sort of, to me, was sort of the heart of the film, and his death was the one that the first time around that affected me the most, because it was really kind of the most brutal. But the scene that to me sort of raised the bar and I'll sort of set the standard for what we're going to get in these what are they calling them? Legacy films?
Stories.
Was when we went to Mustafar, and it was the only planet that didn't get a super title in front
accident.
Of it. But we saw Vader's castle, and I'm sure all of you guys remember one of the things Lucas said he always planned to do was show Vader in a castle on top of a volcano on a lava planet. I freaked out. I had the same one and only fanboy moment I've ever had in a theater. My friend that was with me had no idea what I was freaking out about. I just said, I'll tell you after the movie. But seeing that and then seeing Vader basically in the bath for all intents and purposes just blew my mind. And I thought, okay, they're going there. We're getting fan service, but they're taking deep cuts. This is going to be a fun ride from here on out. I cannot wait.
There, yeah, that's famously Lucas wanted that in Empire, but there wasn't a way to do it. And then for Jedi, McQuarrie made an actual art piece for that, which you can see in the making of books, which is super cool. There's a lot of things like that. Like when they talk about being the guardian of the wills, that, you know, from the very first page of the original A New Hope was great. And I did mean Bodhi Rook, by the way. Thank you for helping me, Corey, on that. I meant Bodhi was the one that was so, you know, incredible, the acting for that. Randy, what about you? There's a lot of key moments, a lot of key characters. And some, I think, at least for me, grew on me as time went on. Some did not. What about for you?
Definitely. As you guys are talking, Bodhi is... and it's so funny that I just had a conversation about him today. But I'm thinking about Bodhi as a character, how much of sort of like a Grand Admiral Thrawn and his eventual demise. You know, he was kind of overconfident in his efficiency, and the whole idea that it. I think it's what Jeff was talking about as far as, like, you know, here's the Imperial. That's a finely comes across as this finely tuned machine. If you're in the control room of the Death Star, it's, you know, it's efficiency. It's black and white. It's execute an order, and that's the way it goes. And then here's this rogue pilot that brings the whole thing down. With his sacrifice and with his courage, and especially as you read the book, you hear like his inner thoughts, and you feel his fear a lot more in the novelization than you do in the movie. But you still see his fear in his facial expressions. So, right. But he acts anyway, and I think that is a character that people are going to fall in love with more and more every time they see it. People are going to realize that this guy is the guy that, you know, as he's making efforts to flip that switch, to get to that switch. There's been levels of just laying you know, laying my family on the altar, laying, okay, now my future, laying the rest of this day, my life. I mean, at this very moment, my next breath, laying it down to get this mission accomplished. It is super cool. But the moment for me, as far as the scene goes, the moment that really defined the movie for me was we all agree that the Darth Vader scene was like lights out, amazing, awesome. But the frantic, the rebel soldier that is sticking his hand through the crack in the door and frantically yelling, "Take it, take it, take it." At that point, I know that it's eventually, every one of us knows it's eventually going to be handed off to someone who's going to hand it off to someone. But I've completely forgotten episode 4 at this point and am completely lost in the tension and in the anxiety. Is he going to make it? I was entertained. I was in the universe. I was completely lost in, is he going to make it? What's going to happen? How you, and Vader's getting closer and closer and closer. And yes, the fear is Vader, but it's just the frantic yelling of him and him going through that process of trying to preserve his own life and then giving up and just take the data disc, you know, take it, take it. That moment there was the most intense moment for me, and even more impressive because I already knew the outcome, and it was still an incredible moment for me. So
honestly, after seeing it 3 times, I still felt it was such an intense passing of the baton. There's a lot of interesting motifs there with that, but it's very, very powerful. Jeff, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, Randy, when you see it a second time, you'll be just as tense the entire time, because the second time I saw it, and I caught myself going, why am I sitting here clenched? Why am I clenched? I know what's going to happen, but it doesn't matter. It's such phenomenal filmmaking. Gareth Edwards is a heck of a filmmaker.
Yep.
He is. True. Aaron, what about you?
You know, all these characters connected in one way or another, K2SO, Jen, Cassian. But for me, the one that really stood out for me was actually Krennic, Director Krennic. He had this empire, his mini empire inside the empire he was building in the leading the construction of the Death Star. Make sure everything was working, and he had this whole world around him, and he had his plan and how he had it was ready to go. And at that day when everything is going perfect, they're test firing the weapon and destroying the Jedha city. Next thing you know, the rug's pulled out from under him, and he's left trying to clean up a mess of who's spying, who's the internal mole. He's lost. He's essentially lost his command. He's lost his position. He's now in a cleanup mode to try to regain what power he had. And for me, the scene that really capitalized on that was there on Mustafar when he was talking to Vader, and Vader told him they were going back and forth, and Vader told him what his mission was going to be to nail down this spy and make sure that nothing happens to the Emperor's weapons, because they're not going to find out about it till then. And he's like, so does that mean I'm still in command? And next thing you know, Vader's just choking him. He's like, don't choke on your aspirations. I mean, it was very, very real at that point, because one, it felt more like Star Wars because we had somebody being choked out by Vader. But also, you go right back to A New Hope with that one. But it made it was a real emotion coming from him, because he had a glimmer of hope that he was regaining the power that he had just lost. And definitely I really connected with that, going through some of the stuff I'm going through in real life with work, seeing that glimpse of hope of getting just that little bit of power back made a difference.
Sure.
Aaron, I really like that assessment a lot. And did you note, with bitter irony at the end, you know, as Krennic is atop the tower on the data vault, and he looks up and he sees his creation that he's nurtured for so long, that he's devoted his life to, that he's killed for, that he's used to jockey for influence and position within the Empire for, realizing that
it's going to kill me, literally.
Mm. It's like rain on his wedding day. very ironic. I caught that right off the bat. It was definitely a bittersweet moment. I mean, you see his, he looks up, he sees the triumph of his career right there about to annihilate him. And it almost a bittersweet, I'm proud, but screwed at the same time. It's just not a good way, not a good day for him.
That's right. That in the business, what we call situational irony. And I thought it was beautiful, especially when he's on top of his little ivory tower. Yeah, it's good stuff. You guys have all given me a lot of cool things to think about, as I'm sure our Coffee with Kenobi family members who are listening have felt. Is it too late to mention there's a spoiler warning? I think the movie's made over $500 million. You're listening to the show. You know everybody on this show. I think it's fair to say we're going to be talking about this and have been. I think, Matt, for me, one of the things I love about this movie so much, and I'm sure you'll all agree, is the fact that they captured the essence of New Hope without feeling like 1977, but still very much feeling like that. The technology, the mannerisms, just the way that Gareth Edwards was able to patch this all together and make it feel like a legitimate bookend to A New Hope, where you wouldn't feel like if there was someone brand new watching the two films, if the quality of the film was the same, if they're watching 1080p or you know, 4K or whatever, both of them, I feel like nothing would be lost in translation.
Yeah, you know, Dan, I think it's interesting, too, that aspect of the film stands alone really well. And I got to thinking about that a while afterwards. And this might be the first Star Wars film some people see of their generation or of just not having seen other films. And it does a really good job of not spoiling anything. It doesn't leave you wanting necessarily what's going to happen next type thing. Obviously you can go out and watch the sequels, but I like you said, it stands alone well, and that's a hard thing to do. It was definitely an experiment, I think, for them.
Well, when you and I were seeing it for the first time together, when it first starts, I mean, obviously there's no opening crawl, Corey, as we all know, and then I think in addition to that, like the film, just the music just kind of is jarring. I actually jumped out of my seat with the first beat of the music. How much do you think that's, I mean, obviously we know why they did it and I think it was very effective, but do you think they should duplicate this sort of recipe for the Han Solo story and what else is to come, or do you think they should just keep this unique as a rogue film?
Yeah, I mean, branding wise I definitely think this is, they've got a lot of different mediums here. Like I said, the music's different, the direction's a little different. Just the Star Wars itself, there's no crawl. That we see the title, you know, a few minutes, it was maybe a good 10 minutes into the film itself, the Rogue One comes up on the film. It was different that way, and they're sending a message saying, this is going to be something different you guys haven't seen before. And, you know, I would hope we get that with Han Solo. I think Han Solo will be harder, I think, because it is a character we all know already. These characters we don't know, but Han Solo is a guy that, you know, everyone knows. I mean, he's the crux of cinema, I think, when they go to create a new, you know, character or, you know, will not care type guy, as far as being, you know, the hero or, you know, saves the day. But, and I think too, it's, they know that going in, this again was kind of that test thing. Can we get this done? Can we make this happen? And they succeeded very well.
I agree, Matt. In addition to the changes with the opening crawl, the music is a lot different. And there's been a lot of talk about it, and I would say it's almost overwhelmingly positive. Michael Giacchino, is it Giacchino, Giacchino? Depends on who's saying it, and what time of day, I guess it is. Mm-hmm. But how did the music set the stage for you in a beautiful way? Because talk about daunting, replacing John Williams, even just for one film. That's a big deal.
It is a big deal, and in this case, it worked. I mean, Lucasfilm said from the get-go that this is not your typical Star Wars film, and they aimed to make a Star Wars film unlike any other, and they succeeded. And I think, clearly, to do that, you have to stick to your guns, and you can't bring in John Williams. Michael did a wonderful job. His score was uplifting. It was frenetic and kinetic, much like the pace of the film itself.
Nice.
And I loved how we got to see, or actually see here, rather, these gradual homages to certain elements of John Williams' iconic pieces. I mean, you know, like the, you know, I swear I heard some smidges of the Imperial March. You know, I, you know, Darth Vader's theme, but it wasn't overpowering so as to be glaringly obvious. And it melded so well with his music. And I got to tell you, this was one of these things. The day the CD came out, I did buy it. I've been listening to it while doing my commute to work, and it's a nice piece of it's a great piece of stirring music. And the fact that he did it in less than a month, good Lord, I know. That's astounding. And to me, that helps set that stage for this being a Star Wars film unlike any other. And that's fine, because these films are not designed to be the Skywalker saga films. These films are not designed to be the Han Solo, Lando Calrissian, Chewbacca buddy flick. And this, each one of these films is going to be different. And I think each one of these Star Wars stories should have its own voice and its own take. You know, if there's a crawl in the Han Solo film, that's cool, because, it's involving three major characters from the saga. So I can see it happening. It doesn't have to have John Williams music. I mean, I'm sure it'll use some, but again, why would it? We're going to be seeing these people in a situation and at a point in their lives we've never known about, we've never actually seen on screen. And that's fine. I'm okay with that. I like knowing that when I go see a Skywalker saga film, I'm going to hear John Williams. I'm going to hear those wonderful refrains, those amazing and uplifting, orchestral works. I'm also cool about going to see Star Wars stories that have new composers with new music that only just burnishes the legend and the oral awesomeness of it all.
Agreed. And with Clone Wars and Rebels, we had to, Kevin Conners had to take these themes and adapt them and kind of put his own spin. And Randy, I know you had some thoughts on this as well.
Yeah, I think I might be the only one that while watching the movie, that was one of the things that was frustrating for me, because I felt like there was a handful of times where I was anticipating a certain feel or a certain piece of music, or I heard the first two notes of an existing melody and was waiting for the finish of the melody, diverted from that. I know inside of Jyn Erso's theme song is the first two notes of Across the Stars. I've been listening to the soundtrack over and over again since I've been listening to the soundtrack just by itself. I've really been able to appreciate it as beautiful music. That Jyn Erso, the Hope theme is absolutely beautiful. It's amazing. I also know that there's only seven notes in a scale, and I know that there's not a lot of notes to go to, and there's nothing new under the sun. So to create music that's original but still pays an homage to to the previous composer is a tricky task, and considering all the things that that Michael Giacchino had to go through to get this done, it's an amazing feat. But I do, and I know Aaron, you're probably going to echo this. I think that it just makes Kevin Kiner, it makes me appreciate Kevin Kiner even more because of the work that he's done and how he's tied in Rebels music into the original Star Wars catalog of music. I felt like Kevin Kiner has done a better job at that than Michael Giacchino did. But like I said, I think I'm the only one that hasn't really, that was frustrated by the soundtrack as I was watching the movie, but I have come to appreciate it as music, in itself, just by listening to the soundtrack, just isolated. So I think I'll read the comments below, I'm sure.
Wait, you're not the only one. I walked away from the film actually with my biggest disappointment of the movie. Even after I watched it the second time, my biggest disappointment has been the soundtrack. Because to me, it felt rushed. He like Matt said a moment ago, he had a month to put it together. And I'm not saying I could have done better in a month. I probably couldn't have made it through two notes in a month, just trying to figure out which one's what a note is. But it's it's not my forte. And more power to him for getting it done in the time frame he did. But with Star Wars, you know, there's always been a connection to the music that draws people in. And up until, I would say, the last theme of the movie, when everything is going down, everybody's dying. Spoiler alert. There's that fanfare through the end that really is the only one I connected to watching the movie. Everything else just felt like it was rushed. It felt like it was force placed into the movie. Kevin Kiner is phenomenal what he does on Rebels. I sing his praises week in and week out during the season and during the off season. He's phenomenal. And I love Michael Giacchino. I love the work he has done through with the other Star Saga we won't talk about. In Jurassic World, he's done so much stuff, Star Tours. I mean, he's done so much phenomenal work that I had a higher expectation than what we got. And granted, he had a month to put it together. But even after seeing it the second time, the music still just isn't connecting with me. And I mean, I will admit I have not had a chance to listen to it outside of the movie because I can't find the soundtrack anywhere down here. So I'm still looking for it, but the music never connected me to the movie. And that is by far been my biggest disappointment with Rogue One.
I felt that if he would have used, I mean, even his instrumentation, he's super heavy on trumpets and the higher horns. Like even if he brought in more of the French horn, which is, it's almost like, you know, it's almost John Williams' like signature instrument. But I mean, if there was just that warm French horn kind of section that was more prevalent instead of that real harsh kind of trumpety kind of thing going on, maybe that might have bridged the gap a little bit. But I'm with, it's good. I mean, it's good to, is it good to know that there's somebody else that agrees with me or maybe it's just us two. I don't know.
Corey's got something he wants to jump in here on too. Okay. I mean, I know we're running short on time. There's a number of things we can and should talk about, but I want to hear what Corey has to say before we jump on to the next topic.
Yeah, sure. And I said it before in our post show after we saw the movie the first time, and I agree with you, Randy and Aaron. It's not a highlight for me. But then again, just talking about it and stuff that Matt brings up, I think it brings more value to it for me of this being stepping outside that Star Wars saga. And we see something brand new here. Just like we've seen the entire film. Like the gripes are really minuscule for me, but the music is I still struggle with it. So I jumped online and I guess they had a free
Spotify
had it on for free. So Aaron, if you get a chance, check that out. And then listening to it just like that really heightened it for me the second go around. And then I could look for those cues. The one that bothered me the most is the title scene of it. Kind of, I'm waiting for that sweeping, you know, John Williams score to be there, and it's not there. And I have to come to grips that this is not a George Lucas film in the sense of, you know, he's not in the role of a director. So we're seeing new talent taking these on. So I think it's I applaud it there.
I do think that the title card of Rogue One looks that particular musical interlude is too understated. But overall, I very much think not only is this one of my favorite Star Wars soundtracks, but I would be okay with him doing Star Wars films for the next 20 years. I thought it blew me out of the water. I thought it was much more powerful than I expected, the way he blended things naturally. It almost sounded like John Williams' deep cuts that deserved to be on the A side of a record. Matt, were you going to say something?
Yeah, definitely could have used more cowbell.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Before, just to keep it so that we're not on for the next 3 hours, even though I think that'd be fun, I want everybody to go around and just kind of say, you have the floor for about 2 or 3 minutes. Talk to us about the most important themes, ideas, aspects of this film and how it advances the Star Wars saga overall. And I believe, Jeff, we hadn't gone to yet, so I'm going to start with you and round around and have Matt close us off for this part. But tell me what this does for Star Wars for you, how it ends the franchise, and overall, concepts and questions that it brings up that you think will be worthy of discussion for the next year, 10 years, and so on?
Well, before I do that, since I didn't get to say anything about the music, I have it on good authority from my friend Dr. John Noreen, who is a doctor in music, that Michael Giacchino is a genius, and anyone who doesn't think so is just wrong. I just want to throw that out there.
Well, there you
That's
go.
That's fair.
But no, seriously, to me, Star Wars has always been about hope. You know, the first film was retroactively subtitled A New Hope. The last word in this film, spoiler alert, is hope. And that is what Star Wars has always represented to me. And this film, the theme of hope is it permeates the film throughout. You know, Jen Erso says rebellions are built on hope. And that's all these people have to live for, is the hope that what they're doing is going to make a difference and is going to bring down this evil empire that is so oppressive. And that, again, that's the main theme throughout the film. It's that hope, and that we all have a choice to make. You know, I believe it's Riz Ahmed's character. What's his name? The pilot?
Bodhi Rook.
Bodhi, thank you, Bodhi Rook. You know, that's not as easy to remember as Han Solo. I'm sorry. He makes a comment about, you know, when his eyes were open, he had a choice to make, and he made the choice. And same with Jen Erso, she has a choice to make. Cassian has a choice to make. All of these characters have choices to make at certain points about where they stand and which side of the line they're going to stand on. And it's those choices that make us who we are. And that and the hope that they all had are the two main themes that I took away from this. And I think that's something that you get throughout Star Wars.
Jeff, 20 seconds. Biggest quibble with the film. Go.
Digitarkin and Digileia. For a couple of reasons. One, they didn't quite work as well as the filmmakers thought they did. And as an actor, I just have a real problem with someone's likeness being used after their demise.
Fair enough. Randy, what about you? Most powerful, impactful things, key topics that you think are there, ideologies, and how this has changed Star Wars, and we'll give you a quibble countdown at the end, too.
Okay.
The trouble with quibbles.
I think that's, isn't this, with the characters kind of coming together, as you guys have been talking, as I've been kind of thinking about, especially with the events of the past couple days, with Carrie Fisher passing away, it really causes Carrie Fisher's performance, especially in A New Hope, to just, as if it could anymore, but just blossom. Because I felt, I'm feeling more and more like that she was the glue, that the characters that came together for A New Hope could have been just as disconnected, but still, you know, the same cause, but just as disconnected as Rogue One. As far as, you know, the gelling of the character and the chemistry of the characters. But I feel like for A New Hope that Carrie Fisher was that glue. And I think it's very fitting that the very last face, or one of the last face, the big scene at the end, that Carrie Fisher's face is featured. And that is the conclusion of Rogue One, giving us a taste of the glue, or the binding agent, or the coming togetherness of A New Hope is Carrie Fisher's character and Princess Leia, and her strength and her power. And I think that especially in light of the
fact that Rogue One just was released, it ends with Leia. And then Carrie Fisher passing away. All I can say is that although those things all kind of coming together, we're gonna look back and we're gonna see this as an era. I will anyway, as an era, like a Carrie Fisher moment, even pointing forward toward A New Hope. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the significance of. Because this is fantasy, but there's a real person there, and she killed it. She killed it in A New Hope. And she, and so it's fitting that that Rogue One finished with her, and especially in light of her passing.
Do you have a really quick, brief quibble about the film? Besides the fact that you hate the music and which would be burned from existence?
Apparently. I wish, okay, and I know Luke and I agree here. I wish that it was Leia's, I wish it was just her hand or her shoulder and her voice that said Hope. I wish it wasn't that big round-eyed anime character, Hope, you know. I wish Agreed. It was a little bit more subtle and hinting to the fact instead of right on the nose. That is something that I wish that they had back. But I say that, and I know I'm out of time here, but I say that in deep, deep appreciation for the fact that Gareth Edwards took risks, and I'm willing to put up with that because he did take risks, and I want to thank him for that with my appreciation for his movie that he directed.
If Gareth Edwards can go from the narrative disaster that is Godzilla to Rogue One, I hope that Colin Trevorrow can do that with that awful Jurassic Park movie. Okay, sorry. Aaron, what about you?
You know,
I mean, it's not Pacific Rim. That's terrible. Yeah. Anyway.
Hey, now.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You and me, Dan, after the podcast, out back.
Yes. I'll hold them down.
It sounds like it would have more plot. That story right there would have more plot. No, go ahead.
You're not wrong.
Oh, man.
I will fight all of you.
Matt and I already have better chemistry than anybody in that movie.
You know, the movie overall, I mean, I think Jeff said it perfectly to begin with. I mean, the Hope just exuded through the movie. And you cannot sit down and watch the movie without feeling the hope. And not only the hope, but the desperation of this fledgling rebellion. I mean, I have to go back to a recent episode of Rebels where basically they went after something that the Empire had given up on, not because they could succeed, but they could succeed because they were desperate. And you see that desperation coming through this movie. And they're, instead of calling it, saying that they were desperate, they said it was because they have hope that they'll succeed. And a lot of their desperation turned into hope throughout the movie. And definitely that's what really jumped out at me through this whole thing, was it was just one giant leap of desperation, which they had a lot of faith in what they could do, and it wound up working for the best for them.
Well said. Do you have a quick quibble?
Well, outside of the music, which apparently I'm wrong on, but
you're not wrong.
But outside,
we all can be sometimes.
Hey man, all these opinions are beautiful. We all have such an incredible thing in common with being Star Wars fans and podcasters. But the fact that we take the same thing, we all look at it through a different lens, is why I love this medium. So yeah, it's right on, brother.
It fills in great. Love the differing opinions. But outside of that, you know, I didn't have a problem with the Digi-Tarkin or Digi-Leia. That didn't bother me at all. Punta Baba and Evian there, I did have a little bit of problem with that, just trying to figure out how they could have escaped in time from the city before it was destroyed. But other than that, the biggest quarrel I had outside of the music was just the opening, not the opening scene, but after the opening scene when the name of the movie just shows up. I feel they could have done a better job on that. It looked a little cheesy to me. Other than that, that was pretty much it.
This could easily be a 5-hour show, honestly.
Oh, easily.
It would be a lot of fun. Corey, I'm interested to hear your thoughts because I know what you think, because we've talked about it a lot and we saw it together for the first time, but obviously time has passed. You've seen it with your kids. What's changed for you? Or maybe has it just gotten stronger, which you already felt?
Yeah, it's definitely gotten stronger. But what I like about, you talked about the themes and whatnot, I think the characters drive those diverse themes, and they're diverse themselves. I think that's cool. You know, morality, truth, sacrifice, obviously hope. I think what's the best thing about this film for me is it shows how deep and full of richness the Star Wars galaxy has to offer. Even if it's just a, you know, it's a small story telling of these, you know, small group of rebels taking on this mission. There's so much depth, and I kind of forgot that, I guess, because I'm so into the Skywalker lineage and how that's going to play out. There's so much more here than just, you know, the Skywalker story. There's so many other people that it affects. I enjoyed it so much because I made memories. I got to see it with my dad the first time we went. We had one of our guys drop out, and my dad picked up the ticket, snatched up, and he was there to see us live. I think it was cool. Again, and sharing with my kids, the next generation of Star Wars fans, they played it well, and understanding the themes and the motifs of war and how it's real, and just providing a great energy there.
And do you want to have a quibble? Or are you?
I've got a quibble. I guess we talked about the music a little bit. I mean, I don't have a whole lot of quibbles. It's hard to find one with such a great film. Like I said, I think it stands alone really well. I think my quibble, I think, is just the idea of the reshoots. I mean, there's some articles out there that talked about the marketing of some of the scenes weren't necessarily in the film. We're missing some, you know, other components. I'd like to see a director's cut. I'd like to see a 4-hour version, you know, and see what kind of what's missing. What do we get more? Do we get less? I don't know if that's because it was a little too dark, maybe, and they were afraid to go there, which I think they balanced that really well, I think, in the final result of the film itself. And I will say I did like the Tarkin and Leia. I was surprised to see Tarkin, personally. I thought it was really well done. They just put it right in front of your face and said, you know, here he is. And yeah, it wasn't perfect because his mouth was a little kind of chewy. But I really enjoyed it. It showed the power of the characters moving into episode 4.
Very good. Matt?
Yeah, I went on record, you know, as saying when they first dropped the preview for this at, what was it, Celebration in 2015, I think it was, you know, when they offered that sneak preview of just the Death Star looming over what we yes. now know to be Scarif, that, you know, as excited as I was about The Force Awakens, Rogue One was the film that I was really waiting for. And the wait was completely worth it. This film, there's a lot of, you know, there are people who complain, justifiably so, that it's a dark film. And it is a dark film. Because when you are upending the nature of a system, political, cultural, religious, or otherwise, dark things happen, and people suffer on both sides, even those for those who are involved and those who are not involved. And this film showed it. It showed it in very direct ways, you know, with the deaths of all of the members of Rogue One. And indirect ways, you know, with the notion of the little girl that Jyn Erso saved on Jeddah was dead the next day, you know, or within mere hours of being saved, an innocent caught up in the Empire's machinations. And this film was needed and is needed to show that it's not all glory and light in Star Wars, that there is that seedy underbelly, that you do break a whole ton of eggs to make space omelets. But at the same time, it offset the direness of this all with what we saw in the characters, both the team of Rogue One and even, you know, with those rebel pilots and, you know, Admiral Raddus's team and Mon Mothma. Each and every one of them reach deep within themselves to find their own sense of inner strength to carry on and to move forward, to take the extra step, to climb that next rung, to get through the gap, to make it to the light, to get the plan sent. And we saw it on the profundity as Darth Vader just chewed those rebels to pieces. And yet they still got the tapes delivered to Princess Leia. And to me, that speaks volumes. That speaks all about hope. And as Randy said, that has even more immense impactfulness now, given in light of the death of Carrie Fisher and her role as Princess Leia. It's a film that needed to be made for Star Wars. And I'm really pleased as punch that for some people, it's their first Star Wars film, because I really think it's going to drive their interest in the other films. And I'm also really pleased as punch that it's a film for old people like me, you know, who grew up with the notion of, you know, mustaches and mutton chops on the rebel pilots. And I will be forever grateful that they did more than just mimic the environment of A New Hope, that they actually made it living and breathing again. Now, my only quibble, and it's a minor one. No, actually, it's not a minor one. I would have liked to have seen more screen time for Lyra. I think that...
Catalyst.
Especially after Catalyst. It did seem almost like a Disney trope, you know, that the mom dies. Granted, you know, they took it one step further, you know, by essentially saying that, you know, telling Jen, okay, you get to live with Saw Gerrera. Oh, fun. my minor quibble is simply this: the Death Troopers. I found them to be very aesthetically pleasing and very menacing, but I would have loved to understood what it was they were saying when they spoke, because their communications were so garbled. And I imagine that may have been by design. It may have been coded, sure. But it would have just been nice, you know, because we're so used to hearing stormtroopers talk, you know, and it just, you know, like I said, it's a minor quibble, but it's a quibble that I have.
What, maybe they were saying the whole time, my mic isn't working. Maybe they were saying that.
Listen, we can hit something. Let us, yeah, do something.
Or maybe they have really high pitched voices. Oh my gosh, I missed him.
No, the problem is they were all communicating via Skype.
And you couldn't quite see their picture.
I will say this, just in summation, you know, just, you know, in part jest, because, you know, I don't want to leave, you know, make my exit with a somber way, but you know, I do think that at its core, Rogue One is a film about you know, basically backing up multiple copies of your data all over the place.
Well, here's the thing. Did Tarkin not realize he was destroying all of the plans? Or did when he blew up the city, when he blew up the encampment?
Tarkin was so arrogant that he knew that the Death Star would never be destroyed. Yeah. And they were already working on the second one, I imagine. So there was really no need to worry about the plans, because they got number one built. Number two was already underway.
That's silly of me.
How dare you question Will Hulf?
Which is a bummer, because I would have loved it, all those things that she lifted off as she was going through the files to hear, you know, like Darksaber and, you know, man, it would have been cool to. Anyway.
Did you hear that, Marvel Comics? What a great one shot that would be.
Wouldn't it, though? To me, the thing about Rogue One, I think it's visually fragrant. In the fact that it's just a beautiful looking film. I mean, all the films have had their art to them, of course, but there's just something textured about this universe that made it so vibrant. And I said to Corey after the movie, I love being in this universe, and more than I ever have, because I spent most of my life going crazy about Star Wars, as have we all. And I just think there's something so strong and powerful about it. And rarely do I say that seeing a film multiple times adds nuance, because I feel like, I know, I feel like it's there already, but I saw new things. Two things that really jump out to me that improved as I went along is, upon first viewing, while I liked Jyn Erso quite a bit, I felt like there was just not much there. And I felt like she relied a little too much on Cassian and through most of the film. After seeing it last night, I don't feel that way anymore. In fact, he defers to her through the second half of the film quite regularly, which I found intriguing and unique. There's obviously a lack of diversity from a female perspective, which is somewhat surprising. I don't think they were trying to capture the feel of 1977 with that. But overall, I think it's a wonderful movie. I want us all to rank. I know I don't really like doing this, but let's just do it. It'll help us kind of give us a grade. I want to rank these films, all eight Star Wars films, in your order, and you're allowed to change it anytime. But just for the purposes of this, we'll do that. My only quibble is the one I had on Assembly of Geeks, and that's Saw Gerrera. I thought I like him a little bit more now, but I feel like he was extremely over the top. And I understand he's beyond punch drunk, and he's beyond PTSD. I understand that he's seen things I can't even imagine. I don't know. There was just something about that took some of the luster off of the sheen of Rogue One. But that being said, I'm thrilled to see him in Rebels, which Aaron broke for the entire internet, by the way.
That was fun.
It was fun. So let's just start back at the top, Corey. Rank the films real quick, and then we'll let everybody know where they can find us and listen to us.
Sure. This is difficult because that's one of the first conversations that comes up when you ask someone if they've seen the film. Oh, where does it rank in, you know, the other films? And I just, it's so hard for me to do it, but you're putting a knife to my throat, I guess. But I would say I'm still enamored with Episode 7. I think there's a lot going on there. I'm excited for Episode 8. I still rank that as number one for right now. And I will say Rogue One fits right in there because it's so new and so fresh and there's so much going on. It's so much fun to see new Star Wars films along the way. And we're getting those. And that's still something that kind of mystifies me a little bit as far as a fan and seeing that. And then again, A New Hope, I think, is just leads right into Rogue One leads right into New Hope so well. We were the very next day at work, somebody had brought a copy in and we were watching the opening credits and just those first few scenes and going, oh man, it syncs up so well. I think as of my first idea was to go and watch New Hope right after I went and saw Rogue One. And I think it's such gravity there. I think it's so much fun. But then Empire is great too. And Return of the Jedi. And the prequels, I don't know, I guess I don't attach them too much. I didn't grow up necessarily in that era of them, but I do see ramifications of Rogue One in them. So it's interesting to rank them that way for me. I don't know if they're all kind of like, they move around a little bit. My kids love the prequels a lot, so I have a more affinity to them, for them to just kind of be graded that way, I guess.
So your favorite is still Force Awakens?
Force Awakens, yes.
Yeah. Okay, right on. Matt, your order of the films.
This is always a difficult question and a difficult answer, like Corey says, but top film remains Empire Strikes Back, just because it's a technically perfect film on every level. My number two film had been Revenge of the Sith because it was so daringly done and so devastating emotionally. Every time I watch it, I still just, oh, Anakin, don't do that. Don't kill the younglings. But after these viewings of Rogue One, I am elevating it to number two. Because I love the daringness of this entire film, and I love the darkness, yet the hope that resonates within its embryonic core throughout the entire film. And so, yeah, definitely Rogue One is, to my mind, and of course this is fluid, you know, it may well change, but Rogue One is number two on my top Star Wars films list.
You want to list out the rest of them then?
Yeah, sure. Empire, Rogue One, Revenge of the Sith, A New Hope, The Force Awakens, Attack of the Clones, and then Return of the Jedi is before Attack of the Clones.
Wow, fascinating, Jeff.
So, Return of the Jedi, is that Lil' Matt's list? I'm shocked. I know.
It's pretty cool. I love the differences in perspective.
I hate hamsters.
But Matt, they're delicious. You just have to cook them the right way. But no, my ranking is Empire. I'm with Matt on this one. It's the best film in the series. It's my favorite film of all time. Empire, Star Wars, which most people know as A New Hope. I just call it Star Wars because I'm that hardcore. And Rogue One sits at number three right now. And it's Return of the Jedi comes in just after it. If I had to rank them, I would say Rogue One is three and Jedi is like 3.1. Mm. And just below that comes in The Force Awakens because I really enjoyed that. But I do think Rogue One is a better film than The Force Awakens. And I think it's probably, I think it is the third best film in the series. After that, Revenge of the Sith, and then a steep drop off to Attack of the Clones and an even steeper drop off to The Phantom Menace. But I will say I took my friend Moose, you guys, if you've listened to Bantha Banter, also available at marvindogmedia.com. My friend Moose, she's a 12-year-old girl, took her to see it. And she said at the end of the movie, this was the best Star Wars movie she's seen so far. She's seen them all. This one's her favorite.
Wow. Randy.
All right. this is, boy, this is difficult. And I've had time to think about it. I'm going to go with Empire as well. I don't know. No, you know, I'm going to go with Empire, and a really close Rogue One would be second. If the score was anything that I enjoyed, it would have taken it. So that's two. So A New Hope would be three. Revenge of the Sith. Return of the Jedi. And then, Phantom Menace, and then Attack of the Clones. But man, I really want to say Rogue One because of the cinematography was just
gorgeous,
out of this world. Just to show an explosion, and have you guys seen it in 3D? Am I the only? Yes, have you seen it in 3D?
I've seen it in 3D.
I haven't seen it in 2D yet. I'm going in a couple days to see it in 2D. But the idea that Gareth Edwards can throw an explosion on a screen and you see the detail of an arm inside of that, or you hear a bump of a head on a cabinet, or just not to just fill the screen with an explosion, but to still hold on to the detail of, I'm still making a movie here, and putting a detail, a sound effect, or some little something to bring detail to the vastness or the violence of an explosion. Or I just appreciated it so much. It's so close to Empire for me.
The sound effects editing in this movie is brilliant, I will say.
Yeah.
Aaron.
This is probably the hardest question I've been asked in a long time. A New Hope will always be number one for me because it's what introduced me to the saga. It will always be my favorite. Followed by Return of the Jedi and Empires. After that is still Revenge of the Sith. Then I would throw Rogue One in. Then after Rogue One, Force Awakens, then of course Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. Rogue One was phenomenal. That lack of soundtrack is still bothering me to the extent that I can't rank it as high as I can some of the others. Even though I absolutely love the movie and I will definitely go see it probably another dozen times while it's still in theaters, it doesn't have the full effect feel for me. So
I think the thing about Rogue One that is so captivating is that it's all the things that I didn't expect, that I didn't know I wanted, but now I'm really glad I have them. It's kind of like when I tried broccoli for the first time when my wife made it for me. But I it's hard to rank them. I agree. Empire and A New Hope are 1 and 1A for me all the way. And it's hard to me, if you took Rogue One, Return of the Jedi, and Revenge of the Sith, basically any Star Wars movie that starts with an R, if you put that in a hat and spin around, any one of them could be your favorite of the time. It's hard for me to put anything above the original trilogy because that's why I'm here right now, because of those three movies. But I probably would say, I think I will still stay with my original Return of the Jedi, and then Force Awakens, and then Rogue One, although you could make an argument for those. And then I would say I would rank Attack of the Clones my least favorite. Phantom Menace would be my second least favorite. And the reason it's not my least is because Qui-Gon Jinn. So there you have it, everyone. This has been a really great conversation. There's so many more things we can look at, which is why we've got the entire year until Episode 8 and beyond to really discern what's going on behind the scenes of Rogue One, what it means for the story of Star Wars, and what it means for film from this point on, because I think things are different now. I think I hope that people get one of the beauties of Rogue One is the nuance. It's not, you know, Game of Thrones, where just gratuitous violence sometimes for the sake of violence, it could probably be argued. But there's a reason here. There's a methodology. Nobody lives in the movie. And I think that had to happen. It has real weight to it, and it's just a beautiful thing. So Again, thank you everyone so much for not only being a member of the Coffee with Kenobi family, but for joining me tonight. For some of you, it's really late, and I appreciate it so much. And let's just go back, Matt and Jeff, go ahead and tell everybody where they can find you, both individually and as well as your excellent show.
Take us out, Jeff.
Well, you can find Matt and I on the Coffee with Kenobi feed, hawking our wares on Comics with Kenobi, as Matt likes to call it, serious looks at funny books. You can find me on Twitter at TheJeffMcGee and at MarvinDogMedia. And I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but I do have my own podcast network, Marvin Dog Media, home to Talking Toys with Taylor and Jeff, okay. Bantha Banter, and the pilot episode. So you can check us out at MarvinDogMedia.com. And I also appear on Assembly of Geeks, which is coming back next year with a slightly different format. And we have a couple of other shows in the works there. AssemblyofGeeks.com, you can go to for all of that information. Scott Murray and I are on that show. And Matt, I believe your Twitter handle is Gorilla Scribe, but I can never remember how to spell it.
GUERILLA, is that right?
Yep, two R's, two L's. So.
Just like Mississippi.
Yeah, exactly. Because Mississippi has lots of L's. And you can also find me as a co-host of Comic Book New with Scott McMurray and Regina Davis. And we take a look at comic book characters who have made the leap into other forms of media. And we try to break down their comic book origins and history and compare and contrast them to TV and movies and as well as video games.
And Randy, your co-host, Luke, and we didn't mention at the top of the hour, Luke Siders is not able to join us, as are Amy Reckless or Dr. Andrea Letamendi. They all wanted to be here, but, you know, it's hard to kind of make a time for all of us to meet. So this was kind of how it worked out. Who knows what will happen for episode 8, but we certainly appreciate you being here, Randy, the original guy to go ahead and say, hey, let's do this on Coffee with Kenobi. And, I mean, you were like kind of like the pioneer here for us for adding on these excellent shows. And I'm lucky to not only listen to, but become friends with all of you. So, Randy, tell us a little bit about where they can find you.
Well, I do want to say hello to everyone on Luke's behalf. They just brought baby Mara home 2 days ago. And so she's doing great. And he wanted everyone to know that he was sorry that he was that he had to miss tonight. You can listen to Legends Library on the Coffee with Kenobi feed. Our next show coming up, we're going to be talking about Timothy Zahn's book, our last Timothy Zahn book that we're going to review. It's called Choices of One. It's a Mara Jade centric book. So other than that, you can get a hold of us through our email, legendslibrary@coffeewithkenobi.com. And we also have Legends Library on Twitter. And I'm very grateful. You guys did all the work. You and Corey starting this thing out, you guys did all the work. And I'm so glad to be a part of what you guys are doing.
Hey, we are but a mirror for all of you, man. It's you guys all are such an essential part of all this. And Aaron, where can everyone find you? And when can we look for the next Rebels Reactions?
Well, the next Rebels Reactions is right around the corner. Matter of fact, I'm finishing editing it as soon as we're done here. But you can always find me on Twitter. That's the best place to find me, at T.A. Harris 121079, or the Rebels Reactions feed on Twitter, at Rebels Reactions. You can also email me, aharris@ coffeewithkenobi.com. or through the show, Rebels Reactions at coffeewithkenobi.com. And it's definitely a lot of fun. Look for the latest episode. And we got some contests coming up through the latter half of season 3. So stay tuned for that.
Yay. And Corey, you're on a show, right? Tell me about that.
Yeah, something to do with coffee and Star Wars and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I'll throw a little blurb out there for our most recent news. We were interviewed through our local newspaper, and I got to see my grandma through the holiday season, and she was blown away about what we did. And it's just funny because she's 90 years old, and she had no idea what a podcast was, no idea what, you know, what it was all about, but she enjoyed reading about that. And you know, it's just cool to see that transcend and bring people happiness in that way. So I'm grateful for that. Yeah, definitely.
It's because of the picture, right? The goofy picture.
That's right. Hey, friends for life. Yeah, you can check us out at coffeewithkenobi.com. Check us out on Twitter, Facebook, @coffeewithkenobi. Just type us in on Facebook. Check us out. We've got a great presence on, I think, on Instagram now. We're all over the place on YouTube. I recently had to revamp some things, but we're there. You can listen to us there. You know, as it seems like we're just growing and growing, and I'm looking forward to 2017 and interacting with new friends, new family members, and fans of the show. Just looking forward to, you know, gearing up for episode 8. I mean, it's going to be, that's the next one we're kind of setting our sights on too, right? I mean, so it's going to be a great year and looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got, I guess I can officially announce who our first guest is going to be for our January show, and that's going to be Mike Pilot from Full of Sith. He was at the premiere of Rogue One, so we're going to find out kind of more about what happened there and just kind of talk more about this incredible new addition to the Star Wars franchise. Corey mentioned all the places you can listen to us and find us on the web. Everywhere you can listen to podcasts, you're going to find every show on the Coffee with Kenobi family of networks. And you can also catch my writing on StarWars.com, where I talk about mostly about comic books as well. So, again, on behalf of everyone in the Coffee with Kenobi family, have a wonderful, happy, and safe new year. There's so much more to come. Celebration, episode 8. A lot of new major announcements. It's going to be a wonderful 2017. And we thank you so much for joining us. Have a wonderful evening, everybody.
Chewie, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com. or CoreyC@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed at coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
Give the evacuation code signal.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.